of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right?
They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 179. 2003's From Justin to Kelly.
From Justin to Kelly.
Yeah.
Sir with love.
Yes. Justin being runner-up in the inaugural season of American Idol, Justin Guarini.
The Sideshow Bob name.
Yeah, the dimples, the matinee idol looks. To Kelly, the Texas belle who belts them out. The girl next door, Kelly Clarkson, mm-hmm. who was a success in her own right and was even further memorialized in pop culture through Steve Carell and the, 40-year-old virgin, where he gets his chest waxed and he yells out, Kelly Clarkson! So, Kelly Clarkson, one of the bona fide successes that this show produced. We are not embarrassed to admit, although we probably should be, we are both...
I'm somewhat embarrassed.
Okay, I'm a little embarrassed. We both were fans of the show when it came out. There was something compelling about seeing a bunch of shower singers oblivious to the fact that their own talent was extraordinarily lacking, displaying it in full force to a viewing audience of millions. And this is the Dunning-Kruger effect in psychology. We might have discussed it in earlier podcasts where there's a discrepancy between your perceptions of your ability and the actual talent it takes to perform something. The more you become expert in something, the more you realize there's more to know and not less to know. The Dunning-Kruger effect is in full display in singing contests where you have people who are horrendous and have no idea. In the early episodes, you would feature these terrible people, and William Hung being chief first and foremost among them.
William Hung was not in the first season, but I do
recall he was the one,
vividly watching the first season of American Idol, this being the one that spawned Justin Guarini and Kelly Clarkson. And unlike recently, because they did cancel American Idol, thank God, mercifully, but now they're bringing it back. Why, I don't know. But American Idol has become a juggernaut. It's a ratings success. The only reason they canceled it was because it was becoming too costly to produce. They had to pay the judges too much money.
Well,
but in the early nascent days of American Idol, they put it on in the doldrums of summer. And that's when you and I have this affectionate term for what we like to watch.
Crap TV.
Yeah. This is like really bad reality shows.
Invariably involving Gordon Ramsay, but
usually,
not necessarily.
The effort's coming up in a couple months. Can't wait for that.
Indeed, yeah.
But, so...
Bachelorette in Paradise, another one. Or is it Bachelor in Paradise? I don't know. There's a show where they take the bachelor, they put them in on an island, and they get... I'll watch anything in the summer.
Was that Survivor Cross of the Bachelor?
Essentially. Because Bachelor is a ratings juggernaut. Bachelor in Paradise, not so much, but it's a spin-off. They throw them on an island. There's various incarnations of these shows.
It seems to me that anytime you want to have a reality show, just like... take some permutation of something, throw them on an island. I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here. We're
exactly.
Not a reality show. Let's have a singing competition on an island. Well, that would be
Why not? Yeah.
So I remember one night, could have been a Tuesday, could have been a Wednesday. It was maybe, a sultry, humid June night, and I'm flipping through the
You're
dial.
Sipping Mai Tais.
I'm by
the pool. I don't even know what.
I don't know what the there's nothing on. It's 8 o'clock on a. It's a pretty good crowd on a Saturday.
Yeah.
It's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday. There's nothing going on. I'm flipping the dial. All of a sudden, Fox TV, American Idol, something new. I had never heard of this before.
Yeah.
I did not know it was coming. I did not know that this was a concept that was highly successful in England, worldwide, being imported to the United States. All I knew was they were advertising a singing competition. And this was something new. I mean, we had reality TV before American Idol.
We even had an idol that everyone was trying to capture on Survivor that would give you immunity.
That's
so,
it.
Yeah.
But this was something new, and I recall watching it, and I remember they mentioned the judging panel, and we had Simon Cowell.
Who?
Randy Jackson. Is he one of the Jackson 5?
Yeah.
No? Okay, another one? Well, unbeknownst to me, I work with Whitney Houston. I work with Journey. Me and Steve Perry are tight, you know. And now
you play bass?
I've actually seen video of us, a Corporal and Randy Jackson on stage with Steve Perry doing Separate Ways. But anyhow, and Hazmin Paula Abdul. And I'm looking at this season, and...
Yeah, and you're just wondering, like, what is this? Yeah, so you see these nobody panelists, and you're wondering what is going on. And clearly, this was a test market. This was a test case by the executive to see if such a show would fly, something akin to the Eurovision Song Contest, which is still going strong, one of the highest-rated shows on the planet. So you figure you could take these nobodies, thrust them into the spotlight. It's a singing competition. You create the next matinee idol, or an idol from the title. You have the added human drama of these people just... getting themselves worked up in the audition room, telling their stories. My aunt died of cancer. I'm doing this for her. I'm singing. I started singing because of my grandmother who got glaucoma. My parents drove me 1,500 kilometers to be here, or whatever it is. There's all these sob stories. You become invested in the people who sing. They present themselves in front of a global audience, in front of these difficult judges, one of whom is the acerbic Simon Cowell, who's caustic. Barbs became the hallmark of the show. His put-downs were what generated an audience for this. He's so mean. Meanwhile, he has an eye for talent. He was an executive with, I think it was BMI. He was a music executive for years.
EMI or BMI?
BMI?
Is it EMI?
EMI, whatever, Body Mass Index.
Exactly.
Hey, we're a little bit drunk here. But yeah, these people had musical pedigree. They knew what flew and what didn't, and yet people would take them to task about being mean. Like, which... always struck me as a bizarre thing, because anyone who knows anything about the arts and the audition process, this is what people go through. Like, hundreds of people will audition for a role and they get shot down in similar manner. This is just revealing the curtain for what happens when a show is cast.
See, at this point, like, the die had not been cast, the template was not established. This was something new, and the early episodes was all about showcasing the auditions, and 80% of the auditions were just crap, deluded singers, as you mentioned earlier with the Dunning-Kruger and so on. And I was watching this going, this can't be serious. Like, this is not a serious competition. However, as the weeks went by and those crap singers got punted and...
whittled down, yeah.
Got solidified to a top 10. And all of a sudden, some talent started emerging. I remember in the first season we had Josh Grayson. He was this, as I said, some decorated...
military guy, yeah, okay.
Who was now going to be singing, because that was his dream, as it turns out he was AWOL.
Oh, no. I did not know that.
LaToya Luckett, who I thought, it was pretty, you know, I mean, she had pipes. She was like a Whitney Houston type singer. And then there was Justin Guarini. And the judges could not stop fawning over Justin Guarini. This was the man that you could tell they were going to groom. They were trying to groom to be the breakout star.
Yeah, I'm only guessing because of the audience was primarily female and they wanted a male winner.
Well,
I'm only speculating,
I mean,
I guess.
He got good reactions from the crowd.
I remember. Focus tested well.
After one particular performance, the normally acerbic Simon Cowell said, all of America is a Twitter of a
Justin Timberlake.
But it's Justin Timberlake. But it is now, I believe it's going to be Justin Guarini. So it was almost like a foregone conclusion. And yet there was this other girl who was in the top 10, and she was shy, she was unassuming, somewhat reserved, but as the weeks went on, she started to, it was almost like a caterpillar, you know, in that cocoon, and she was shaking it off every week, emerging
into this terrible butterfly back tattoo. No, she emerged, she became the focal point of the show,
and all of a sudden, the hearts and minds of audience. What the hell? I mean, this Kelly Clarkson chick has got some real pipes. I mean, this is the real deal. Fuck this Sideshow Bob lookalike. Mm. And I remember rooting for Kelly Clarkson, despite the fact that it was clear that the judges were backing Guarini. And when it came down to the finals, and at this point I'm all in, I'm invested, and Kelly won, because remember, this was the audience that voted. I felt invested. I felt vindicated. I was like, yes, the right person won. So here we are, the inaugural season of American Idol. We have our champion, Kelly Clarkson, her coronating moment, a moment like this. They always give us some pieces of something they have to sing, which somehow references, it's a very sort of like, you know, ambiguous lyric, which sort of like references their experience in Idol plus anything else, you know? Some people wait a lifetime for a moment like this.
Yeah.
And Kelly, it seemed like the world was hers. She was going to become the real deal, a superstar. And she has become one.
Yeah.
But they were not willing to give up with Justin Guarini. Despite the fact that the American public spoke, Kelly Clarkson was the winner, they had to still ride that perceived cash cow being Guarini. So, not too long thereafter, we were treated to a movie in the multiplexes from Justin to Kelly. And we have made no bones about in this podcast. We love musicals. Or at least I love musicals. Do you like musicals?
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Yep.
And we've covered, you know, Xanadu and The Apple and the...
Carousel of Music.
Yeah, somewhat underwhelming, but by the standards set here, fantastic. Fun in Acapulco, really. Mm-hmm. And there's something generally very joyous and uplifting. Generally, they'll put a smile on your face. Even Can't Stop the Music, which tried to capitalize on the Village People's success, and their success was waning at the time. They thrust them in this vehicle to try and regenerate their popularity when disco was really in the dumps. And there's something, each one of those movies has something in common. They at least had one song that was memorable.
At least. Most of them had more.
Mm-hmm.
And they all had heart. That was the thing. Even if the movie was an infamous flop like Xanadu, there was heart. And there was infectiousness in these movies. And yet, this from Justin and Kelly that we just viewed right now lacked all of that. This was pure product. Cynical.
Focus group tested. Market tested.
No, focus cheap. Group tested. Well, focus group would have approved that piece of shit.
Hey, lots of focus groups have, you know, been down on films that later become successes and vice versa, but this clearly had, like, there was lots of tinkering with this, and you could tell in the final product. I think when they realized, we're speculating here, but the difference in talent, I think, is it's a huge chasm between Justin and Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
She gets the bulk of the songs, for the most part, the real belter out showstoppers. He gets the sort of innocuous balladeering, and she dominates 75% of this. And you could tell, I think they realized probably mid-shoot that their big investment, repudiated as they were, the judges, by the American public, this guy cannot carry a big showstopper like she can. And you can tell immediately in the final product, there's no doctoring his voice. She dominates. She's got the big voice. She's the personality that dominates. He's left in the dust. And subsequent to this movie, this is what happened. He is now doing what?
Little Sweet, I believe. He does some commercial or something. He plays like a little miniature hair metal singer.
Exactly. And you know, and other runner-ups and other successes from the show, your Ruben Studdards, your Clay Aikens, continued at least to have some modicum of success. Clay Aiken, for sure. Kelly Clarkson, for sure, who's just been cast to be a judge on the latest incarnation of The Voice.
Okay.
Yeah, and, so, I mean...
And, I mean, he's still successful.
And Carrie Underwood as well. So exactly. The show has spawned successes.
Well, and don't forget Adam Lambert, who's basically now the de facto leader of Queen.
Mm-hmm.
He was a runner-up, etc. Daughtry was pretty successful for a while.
Yeah.
Jennifer Hudson is another one.
Exactly,
yeah. Also cast on The Voice as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, with this movie, and, I mean, this is, again, this is capitalizing on the fact that there... I mean, there was never any sort of romantic tension between Justin and Kelly during the competition of American Idol. They are purely competitors. But this movie is supposed to cast him as sort of like a Frankie and Annette sort of role. This is like a spring break
movie. Beach movie, yeah.
Exactly. And they were supposed to be like, you know, romantic suitors. There's zero chemistry whatsoever. And I'm not blaming that on Kelly Clarkson. Because Kelly is a real deal. She had the voice. She had the swagger. She had the
girl next door
star
looks.
Quality.
Yeah. I'm...
Whereas Guarini was just a haircut.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and they had to capitalize to have both principals in here because they had to cynically tap into both fan bases, and they couldn't just have one person carry this and then throw in a co-star upstart. They had to take the two most popular people to appeal to both audiences. And what you get is a contractual obligation. When you talk about cynicism from the earliest incarnations of the movie business, it's always been about making a buck. From the earliest, like, there's a reason it's called the music business. You have the Tin Pan Alley. People are selling their songs, trying to get successful. This is nothing new. But the fact that it's just, it rode the coattails of this show and came out just as the show was going into the next season, like, you couldn't help but be cynical about it. And really, there's nothing to tie these people together. It's a very, very, very loose series of vignettes based around these two people, one of whom is Justin. He's part of the Pennsylvania posse, coming down from the Keystone State. She's part of the whatever posse. I don't even remember her friends. Kaya and Alexis, they're from Texas. Yeah. That rhymes. Yeah. And they go down to Miami Beach on spring break, and they meet under typical circumstances for a rom-com or something. They meet in the women's bathroom.
Oh, but before that, they met on the beach.
He's a club promoter, but there's more to him than that, and all this stuff. And
she's like a small town girl living alone in the world.
Yeah.
She took that midnight
train. Anywhere. And their friends are telling them, they're giving them advice. So they each come down with two friends. He comes down with this nerd, and he becomes fodder for the comic relief because he wears a pith helmet like he's in 19th century, like hunting elephant in South Africa or something. He's wearing a pith helmet, and he's the nerd who's, what's his name? We don't know. He met someone on the internet because this is 2003. This was the time you had texting, nascent texting. He's the nerd. They have the club promoter friend who's got the frosted tips, which were in vogue at the time. These three buddies are going down to live it up on the beach. She's got two buddies, one of whom, Kaya, African-American singer. She got pipes, arguably, to rival Kelly Clarkson. And then their bitch friend, who's the ice princess, who's Alexis, who's the rich bitch. She's the one who's always in a bikini, the one who's, like, amenable to taking part in these bikini contests. She's clearly the antagonist to Kelly. So when you put these people together, they do a what is it? Was it like a bikini contest involving
a whipped cream?
I've never encountered such a thing.
Well, because you've never gone to Miami or Daytona for spring break.
Maybe wrestling in wet lettuce. I don't know.
Well, nearby,
but. Yeah, and so she obviously takes him to be a player. The question is rather obviously answered here.
But it's not just meat. They met.
They met to connect.
Conspiratorial forces to keep them apart.
Yeah.
Including the machinations of Alexa. But will they eventually realize that they're meant for one another? And through the magic of spring break and song, will they become an item? It's a cynical product. It's pathetic.
It is pathetic.
And it's funny because these two artists... And I say artists very loosely when I'm practicing Guarini. They were contractually obligated to make this movie. Kelly Clarkson knew that this was going to be a piece of shit. And she begged to be released from this obligation. And unfortunately, she could not. She signed a pretty ironclad contract. As you're watching this tepid exercise of a movie, you could tell that Kelly is like, okay, you know what? I'm going to do this. It's a fucking blip in my career. I'm going to go on to bigger and better things, which she has done. Mm. But Guarini is giving it his all, as if this really is going to launch him into break the stratosphere. And as hindsight has proven, Kelly Clarkson
is the bona fide star. Yeah.
And Guarini
is the also-ran. So, as we said, the question whether these two will meet and hit it off is obviously answered in the affirmative. Now, this is marketed to a mass audience. This is an audience that would have been the key demographic for American Idol. And as a result, what you normally associate with spring break, Miami Beach, the debauchery, the drinking, the licentiousness, the drugs, all of that is excised so that it can be the most family-friendly, PG-rated stuff. So all the dance numbers reflect this. Tepid is the word used earlier, like, when the two of them are together and when they're apart, it doesn't matter. The dance numbers are incredibly chaste. And incredibly safe. Even when there's bumping and grinding, it's very, very PG stuff. And it just speaks to the cynicism of this film, because nobody on the planet associates Miami Beach spring break with this kind of stuff. Like, nary a second beer is consumed in this film. The drinks that are drunk are these, you know, umbrella-type libations. You have this, like, a banana daiquiri, these kinds of...
They might as well be virgin.
Yeah, yeah. And no one takes anyone back to their hotel room, motel room. There's not even, like, a deep tongue. Like, there's no make-out, there's no hookups, there's no nothing. It makes you wonder, like, why they would even set this in the belly of the beast when it comes to, you know, sexual deviance, which is South Beach. Like, the whole point of spring break is to go down, get drunk, get laid. There's a secondary character who's the law, and she is routinely keeping tabs on this friend of Justin, who's this club promoter who's trying to run all these contests on the beach and hand out all these different things and orchestrate these bikini contests, and citing him with all these, like, citations of, like, you're violating this so-and-so, you know, bylaw, a beach bylaw. But they're not doing anything untoward. And the cop, as it turns out, the bylaw enforcement officer from Miami-Dade County, whatever she is, she ends up hooking up with one of Justin's friends, and it just has no... There's nothing... I guess maybe they're just... Like, it just speaks to the fact of, like, geez, who is this for? Because if it is indeed for the tween set, why would you set it in the vice capital of North America, Miami? You could have set this anywhere, and it just didn't make any sense. Like, I associate this culture with spring break, collegiate, flashing, girls gone wild. There's just something lacking.
But, see, all of that would have been forgiven if this film had two things. One of two things. A, memorable songs, which it does not. And B, chemistry between our two leads. It has neither. There's not one song that I find myself humming afterwards, nor was there any chemistry between these two
principals, yeah,
who were on wildly divergent career paths. One hanging for the stratosphere, one heading for the gutter. The gutter, exactly. Has Been City.
I was going to quote Oscar Wilde, you know, looking up at the stars from the gutter. But yeah, Has Been City, he's serenading her on a boat driving through the Florida swamp, and we couldn't be any more disengaged. It just, and she couldn't be any more disengaged. Like, so it wasn't like it was just us. There's nothing. No electricity between the two. And you could tell she wanted to be elsewhere, he wanted to be there. And the final product, it shows. And also, like, they're trying to, like, I guess groom her, in a manner of speaking, to be a star. And part of her image, as it was on the show, is to be all about the talent and not about the looks. Because while a pretty girl, she's not a knockout, she's very relatable. Mm-hmm. Here, she's meant to be a stick in the mud. So you seldom see her in a bikini. Like everyone else on the beach, she's wearing a sarong. She's mostly covered. And it's almost like they're trying to build up a chaste image for her in keeping with the chaste image of the movie. So she's supposed to be the prude, and her friends admonish her to unclench. Like, her buttocks are clenched, like, kick it, let loose, and have fun on spring break. But she's not one to do that. And nor would she be, because this is cynically playing into her audience. They're trying to not offend her key demographic, her core demographic. She is chaste. She's quasi-virginal. She doesn't doff any of her clothes like her, you know, her deceitful friend who's trying to get with Justin. Like, she's always, for the most part, clothed and chaste and good. And it's just, as is he. We were saying, like, he doesn't even, in the whole film, he does not take off his shirt. And I thought, okay, for sure, in the showpiece, in the showstopper, he is going to be topless. They're going to showcase these, you know, these, I don't know, like washboard abs. And the two of them are going to connect with this, like, fireworks on the beach. Nothing at all. So I guess you could say it served them both in good stead for their careers, maybe, in terms of keeping them on the PG level, on the family-friendly fare, to keep, because this is what brought them up in the show's popularity. If they had any sort of edge, presumably they would have, you know, bit the dust early on and would have been excised from the show, right? The whole point of them was their relatability, their goodness. Because American Idol, at the end of the day, you're not going to have anyone subversive, anyone edgy. Like, if Adam Lambert is the extent of the edginess with his eyeliner, he's pretty neutered. He's a gay man, but his sexuality is neutered. Yes.
Exactly, yeah. He wouldn't come out while he was a guest on the show, mm-hmm. although it was pretty much
it was common knowledge
that he was a gay man. But yeah, the point you're trying to make, Chris, is what?
It didn't mar Kelly Clarkson's success.
It didn't mark her ascent into pop superstardom, but it was the death knell for Justin Guarini.
All these years later, while the show is no longer on the air, it spawned imitators like The Voice. And I admit I have watched it, and I was asking even you, I don't know why you're the expert on this, as to why one would hitch their wagon to be a judge on this show. And you said that the people who are involved in The Voice, their careers are on the wane. So you said, like, Gwen Stefani from No Doubt, or Blake Shelton. Like, are these people, like, do they need this? Why are they doing this? Because I thought any one of these people are consistently touring rich 1%er musicians who don't need this. But I guess it's the changing face of the music business that you always have to be kept in the public eye to resuscitate your download level. And, you know, Alicia Keys, again, like, she's everywhere. Like, why would she be part of this? Adam Levine, again, hugely successful artist. Like, why would you be part of this? I guess as you hit, there's a shelf life you have in the pop world. Then at that point, you're finished, and you grasp at whatever straws you can to keep yourself in the public eye. That's what I'm guessing for The Voice. But as much as I like The Voice, and it build itself as it's all about the singing. It has none of the cosmetic stuff that American Idol had, and the looks and all this business. That show has yet to spawn even one iota of the successes that your Lamberts and your Underwoods and your Studdards and your Aikens and your Clarksons. It has done nothing. These shows continue to be successful.
American Idol is always, it's been good for the contestants, or at least it was in the early seasons, because they really haven't spawned. Can you name me one winner of, like, let's say the last six seasons before?
Well, Jennifer Hudson was always also on there, which you might have mentioned before.
She didn't win.
No, but it doesn't matter. Runner up. Like, she's still, like, it catapulted her to something. Whereas, it must be audience difference. I don't know. I don't know the.
Whereas The Voice is good for the judges. Now, one contestant has become a mainstream star. But getting back to Justin and Kelly, I do have a question for you. And that is, are you one who is wont to throw your hands up in the air?
Seldom. Never.
No, I mean, you've thrown your hands up in the air once or twice.
I have.
Now, when you do throw your hands up in the air, do you sometimes wave them?
Possibly.
Do you weigh them like you just don't care?
No, because I associate dispassionate not caring with hands in your pockets or clenched arms, like arms folded. I've never understood the association, the correlation, if you will, of not caring and waving your hands in the air. You're referring, of course, in a sly way here to the Showstopper tune in this film, where they do that, which, you know, throw your hands in the air, wave them like you just don't care, had become a cliche years prior to this. It's just, it's cringeworthy as a show-stopping number for this film, in much the same way a sort of pseudo-rap version of Casey and the Sunshine Band's That's the Way, I Like It, also, I think, followed that. And you have this beach choreography showstopper where all the friends get together and dance to this forgettable disco number with, of course, rap verse thrown over top it. Yeah, awful, awful stuff. Not one memorable song. I'm not going to throw my hands up in the air. I did not care about any of the songs. Even the eminently forgettable, terrible Elvis vehicle that he likewise was contractually obligated to star in, a la Clarkson here. Fun in Acapulco, that had more heart than this. This is very cynical movie making. And that gets us into the what did we learn portion of the show.
Well, I mean, other than learning that you, Chris, have never really thrown up your hands in the air and waved like you just don't care, have you ever experienced the roof being on fire?
No. The roof is on fire.
We don't give a shit. Motherfucker burn. I'm just like, what did you learn, Chris?
Well, you had to take a person who's a wannabe singer. This is a frequent trope in these kind of films, where the person's genius is not being properly acknowledged, right? So in the very first scene, we get this Kelly, and she's in this podunk-like saloon, and she's performing. This is some saloon with a country band, and there's one guy in the audience digging it, and she's blowing the roof off the place, speaking of the roof being on fire, and you're going, whoa, this is incredible, like, she's an amazing talent, and the camera pans to the room, and this bar is empty, and she says to her pal, I forget his name, Lucas, from her hometown, says, oh, thanks for supporting me, but she's going nowhere. So that immediately invests the audience, as it does in American Idol, because ultimately the show is about unknowns breaking through the ceiling and becoming knowns. So it sets the template right off the bat, and establishing this Kelly as this diamond in the rough, this talent who's not being nurtured and not being nourished in this podunk Texas town. So that's what I learned.
Yeah, and yet the rest of the film didn't fold that up. I mean, there was not at all one sort of hint or inclination she actually wanted to have a singing career.
No.
Or that that was her ambition.
Yeah, in fact, it was the exact opposite, because she went to spring break to get away from her music career. Mm. So, like, she was failing miserably as a cocktail waitress come singing sensation, doing country music, and her friends say, hey, like, you got to get out of this place. Let's go have some fun on the beach. And then her music completely changed, which is weird, too, because we didn't really delve in that. Like, she was a new country artist. And then all of a sudden, she's doing R&B. Yeah, she's doing Destiny's Child retreads, and I guess whatever it takes.
She have a Curse of Cancer shirt, a la Laverne and Shirley.
Excellent reference there, yeah. So is that what you're going to say you learned?
That's what I learned, man.
That's all you got? Okay, star rating.
Well, as someone who loves musicals, as someone who was actually looking forward to watching this movie and discovering a musical that was unfairly maligned by the public, and having my expectations unfortunately not be met because I realized why it was maligned by the public, because it was a cynical piece of product with no real sort of heart or chemistry or what have you, I can't give this movie much more than 1.5 stars. It just really was a disheartening piece of product.
I'm going to give it 1.75. That extra quarter is for Justin Guarini's beatboxing, which I didn't expect to see, because their club promoter friend, whose name escapes me, with the Frosted Tips, was rapping inordinate amount of time in this film. It's actually interesting to see how a throwaway character, BFF guy, gets as much solo FaceTime as the ostensible co-star of this film. So 1 3/4 for me. Be sure and check out our 5-star website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, for genre film reviews 2 to 3 times a week. And of course, our show uploaded every week for your listening enjoyment. And send us any musical that you'd like us to discuss on the show, reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.